It's 7 o'clock. It's Thursday night. It can only mean one thing. We're here again for the next couple of hours, and of course it is the Ryman Roundup Show. Threw you with a curveball there. That was Mr. Ray Dyer and his new album, Nice One, Cyril. So we thought we'd give you that for tonight, and enjoy Mr. Ray Dyer's dulcet tone singing that for you. As of course a long life Spurs fan, and we thought we'd play that one for you tonight. But we're here as normal, as we said, for the next 2.5 hours, and we've got all the scores. We've got the Ryman Team of the Week for you as well at about 20 past seven. We've got Mr. Nick Bowler from making his return to the show after a week off last week. He'll be here talking everything from Norfolk and probably a lot more besides. In the studio with me, we've got Keith from Thamesmead Town. And, of course, we've also got Gary as well, will be with us as well from Hendon at about 9 o'clock as well. So if you've got any questions at all for Gary or Keith, it's Ryman at hawksradio.co.uk. That's Ryman at hawksradio.co.uk. Send them in and we'll put them to him. Also, we've got a prepared statement as well. Probably about 8:30, we'll give you that from Horsham. So we'll be reading that out, and we'll be discussing a little bit around the decision that was made by the council yesterday around Horsham's new stadium as well. So, of course, if you've got any questions for that as well, it is Ryman at hawksradio.co.uk, and we'll sort those questions out as well. But we'll start then, as we normally do, with the scores. And we'll start off then from Saturday. In the Ryman Prem, it was Billericay Town 2, Leatherhead 0, Bury Town 0, Kingstonian 3, East Thurrock United 1, Leicester 0, Grays Athletic 1, Lewis 3, Hampton and Richmond Borough 2, Harrow Borough 1. The game between Hendon and Canby Island was postponed. Maidstone United 2, AFC Hornchurch 0, Margate 1, Dulwich Hamlet 2, and that's what got them their vote for Ryman Team of the Week nomination this week, doing the double over the mighty Margate. Metropolitan Police 2, Peacehaven and Telscombe 0, Tonbridge Angels 2, Enfield Town 1, VCD Athletic 1, Bognor Regis Town 3, Wingate and Finchley 3, Whittam Town 2. In the Ryman North, it was AFC Sudbury 1, Malden and Triptree 0, Brighton Sea Regent 1, Waltham Abbey 1, Burnham Ramblers 0, Dereham Town 2, Heybridge Swifts 4, Averley 3, Needham Market 2, Thamesmead Town 0, Redbridge 4, Chatham Town 1, Soham Town Rangers 0, Harlow Town 1, Thurrock 1, Cheshunt 1, Tilbury 1, Romford 0, and Wroxham 1, Brentwood Town 1. In the Ryman South, it was Corinthian Casuals 1, Redhill 5, a hat-trick there for Rees Hall. East Grinstead Town 2, Burgess Hill Town 3. So Burgess Hill Town still unbeaten, a Patrick Harding hat-trick there. 2-0 down after 35 minutes. Burgess Hill Town had come back to win by 3-2. Horsham 0, Herne Bay 2. The game between Hive Town and Carshalton Athletic was called off. Mersham 1, Folkestone Victor 3. Sittingbourne 3, Wharton Casuals 4. South Park 0, Faversham Town 4. Three Bridges 4, Chipstead 2. Tootingham Mitcham United 3, Ramsgate 2. And Wharton Hersham 0, Guernsey 3. And David Riho, if I'm right in saying, scored the 500th goal for Guernsey Football Club in the 86th minute in that game against Wharton and Hersham on Saturday. Winstable Town 2, Whiteleaf 2, Worthing 2, Hastings United 0. We then skip forward then to, let's have a look, to Tuesday night. And it was in the Ryman Prem. It was East Thurrock United 0, Kingstonian 1, Enfield Town 3, Canby Island 2. The game between Hampton and Richmond Borough and Maidstone was called off. In the Ryman North, the game between Brentwood Town and Dereham was called off. And it was Burnham Ramblers 3, Waltham Abbey 4. In the Ryman South, the game between Chipstead and Worthing was called off. And Three Bridges 3, Tooting Mitcham United 0. In the Robert Dice League Cup, it was Margate 2, Burgess Hill Town 0. And in the Essex County Cup, it was the game between Redbridge and AFC Hornchurch was called off. The Middlesex County Cup game between North Greenford United and Harrow Borough was called off. And in the Sussex County Cup, it was Lewis 2, Eastbourne Borough 1. And that was after extra time. And then on Wednesday night, it was Horsham 2, East Grinstead Town 1. Wharton Casuals 0, Herne Bay 2. The Vets Cup semi-final between Kingstonian and Middlesex Wanderers was called off. And then, of course, we've just flicked forward then to the fixtures for this week. In the Ryman Prem, it's Billericay Town versus Whittam Town, East Thurrock United versus Bognor Regis Town, Grays Athletic versus Harrow Borough, Hampton and Richmond Borough versus Dulwich Hamlet, Hendon versus Kingstonian, Maidstone United versus Enfield Town, Margate versus AFC Hornchurch, Metropolitan Police versus Leeston, Tonbridge Angels versus Leatherhead, VCD Athletic versus Canvey Island, Wingate and Finchley versus Lewis. In the Ryman North, it's AFC Sudbury versus Great Wakerin Rovers, Brighton & Sea Regent versus Dereham Town, Burnham Ramblers versus Cheshunt, Cray Wanderers versus Brentwood Town, Heybridge Swifts versus Waltham Abbey, Needham Market versus Barkingside, Redbridge versus Romford, Somtown Rangers versus Averley, Thurrock versus Harlow, Tilbury versus Chatham Town, Ware versus Thamesmead Town, and Wroxham versus Morden Triptree. In the Ryman South, it's Guernsey versus Tooting and Mitchell United. That's a 1 o'clock kickoff. Burgess Hill Town versus Sittingbourne, Carshalton Athletic versus East Grinstead Town, Chipstead versus Walton and Hersham, Faversham Town versus Winstable Town, Folkestone Victor versus South Park, Herne Bay versus Worthing, Ramsgate Three Bridges, Redhill versus Hive Town, Walton Casuals versus Horsham, and Whiteleaf versus Mersham. On Sunday in the Disability Cup semi-final, it's Folkestone Victor versus St Albans City. On Monday, it's in the Prem, it's Kingstonia v Lewis. In the Robert Dyce League Cup, it's Hendon versus Hampton and Richmond Borough. The Essex Cup quarter-final, Billericay Town versus Brighton & Sea Regent. In the Kent County Cup, it's Gillingham versus Tonbridge Angels. On Tuesday night in the Ryman Prem, it's Bury Town versus Maidstone United, Enfield Town versus Dulwich Hamlet, Metropolitan Police versus Canvey Island. In the Ryman North, it's Burnham Ramblers versus Great Wakerin Rovers, Dereham Town versus Needham Market, Redbridge versus Barkingside, Thurrock versus Chatham Town. In the Ryman South, it's Faversham versus Chipstead, South Park versus Horsham, Walton Hersham versus Herne Bay. In the League Cup, it's Cheshunt versus Grays Athletic, Witham versus AFC Sudbury. In the Cambridge County Cup, it's Somtown Rangers versus Oversports. Kent County Cup, it's Margate versus Folkestone Victor and Thamesmead Town versus Ramsgate. In the London County Cup, it's Beckenham Town versus Harrow Borough, Cockfosters versus Tooting and Mitcham United. In the Norfolk County Cup, it's Wroxham versus Skull United. In the Surrey County Cup, it's Redhill versus Westfield, and that's going to be played at Westfield. On Wednesday night, it's the Women's Cup semi-final between Charlton and Carshalton Athletic. In the Sussex County Cup, it's going to be Worthing versus Burgess Hill Town. And this time next week, some team called Tottenham Hotspur against Gillingham in the Ryman Women's Cup semi-final. The goal scorers for the leagues. So still top in the Ryman Prem is David Knight from Wingate and Finchley with 20. Sam Higgins has got 18 for East Thurrock United. Leon Smith, 17 for Hendon. Ryan Moss, 17 for Margate. Frederick Lapio's got 14 for Grays Athletic. Kieran Hughes-Mason's got 13 for Leatherhead. Oliver Pearce has got 13 for Bognor Regis Town. On 12 is Charlie Allen from Margate, Franny Collin from Maidstone, Gareth Heath from Leeston. On 11 is Alex Filsher from Maidstone United and Charles Moon from Hampton and Richmond Borough. And on 10 is Billy Metlock from Tonbridge Angels, Craig Parker from Leeston and Mark Omaha for Hampton and Richmond Borough. Get it out. In the Ryman North, it's Alex Reid with 28 for Harlow Town, Christy Finch with 23 for Wroxham, Kieran Bishop 18 from Ware, Remy Gordon 16 from Wroxham, Jason Hallett 15 for Waltham Abbey. On 14, it's Luke Stanley at Somtown Rangers, Ross Wall from Thurrock, Sam Newson from Needham Market. On 13, it's Tyrus Gordon-Young from Thamesmead Town. On 12, is Adam Bowley from Cheshunt, Charlie Stimpson from Thurrock, Luke Ingram from Needham Market, Neil Richmond from Heybridge Swifts, and Ryan Hawkins from Dereham Town. And Albert Abdu from Ware has got 11. In New Ryman South, it's still Chris Smith with 22 for South Park, Ian Draycott 20 for Folkestone, Stuart King 18 for Herne Bay. On 17, we've got Daniel Sumner from Tooting Mitcham United, Ian Pullman from Winstable Town. On 16, Roscoe DeSan from Whiteleaf. On 15, we've got Jack Harris from Faversham, Mark McGrath from Guernsey, and Tommy Hutchings from Mersham. On 14, we've got Patrick Harding from Burgess Hill Town, Paul Booth of Folkestone and Victor, Wayne Wilson from Faversham Town. On 13, Daniel Moody from Chipstead. On 12, we've got Greg Lure from Burgess Hill Town and Jamie Bratt from Crimpton Casuals, who, if I'm right in saying, I think they are, Keith, out in lovely Brazil at the minute.
They are, yeah, that's exactly right. They actually rung us a few weeks ago for a game when I think a lot of games were called off. The BBC were coming to film part of this, so, yeah, they were enjoying more weather than we are.
Well, it's just, I mean, we had them on the show not so long ago, and it was quite interesting to listen to the story behind how they actually go in, you know, going out to Brazil, and they reckon, you know, I think the secretary said to us, he said, like, you know, no disrespect, they said, you walk down Corinthians High Street, he said, and he said, almost everybody's got a Corinthian Casuals shirt. And it was quite funny. I think some of the pictures on Facebook this week and on Twitter, when you see it and you go there and they're all getting mobbed at the, as they're coming off the plane and coming into the airport. And for a side, you know, that's at the same sort of level as ours as well, it must be amazing for them to come out of an airport and just get absolutely mobbed by all these people that from a foreign country that know every single one of them.
Yeah, it's a great experience for them. And obviously they're going to enjoy it, but they've got a great sort of history. And, you know, it's something that obviously I think they're going to live with for the rest of their lives, the players especially.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. So, I mean, we talked a bit more about Thamesmead, you know, after we speaking to Nick and to Stuart, but not been going too badly so far?
A little bit up and down, if I'm honest with you, Dave. We started really well, and we lost a few players, obviously, for being relegated last year, and we've had a few injuries and suspensions, and we just can't seem to get on a run. We've sort of won one, lost two, and, you know, just need a little bit more consistency. But one or two players to strengthen us, and you know, we're not too far away. But it's been a tough league this year, if I'm honest.
I mean, I'm just looking at it. I mean, what we go down to fifth, don't we? So 51, and to your 36, it's only sort of 15. So it's, you know, good run. You always seem to get somebody that goes on a good run at the end of the season. And, yeah. It was Romford last year that almost sneaked in. So
That's how we got promoted 2 years ago, but we started a little bit earlier than that and was a little bit more in contact. But we normally finish really strong. We did last year in the Ryman Prem. You know, we won nine of the last 10, and the year before I think we had one defeat since Christmas. But I just think we need to add a little bit at the moment. Like I said, we've got quite a lot of youngsters in the side, and maybe we're rebuilding for a year or so's time. But you know, you never know at this level. If you can get a win and a little bit of luck, then who knows, come sort of the end of March, where you are.
Well, let's just hope at the end of the season you are where you want to be by the last game of the season, especially if it's important to us, or hopefully our season's over and we're done and dusted, and you might need the points at the end of the season.
Yeah, we seem to come here every single time last game of the season, if I remember rightly. And let's hope it's a good day for both teams.
Looking for the double as well.
We are, yeah. Very fortunate when you come to us, if I'm honest. We got team of the week somehow, but 2-0 down with 20 minutes to go, and I brought a young lad on that changed the game completely. And sometimes it happens. We went two games after that where we should have won and lost, so it's just how funny how football sometimes comes around. But it was a good game for the neutral.
I know it's one of those ones where as I've said loads of times on the show, you know, you get to the sort of Saturday afternoon 3 o'clock and my phone sort of starts going into a spivvy fit because of all the contacts and everything else that keeps beeping on there for the notifications. And of course you get to that, as you just said, about halfway through that sort of you know, first half, and you're thinking, oh, 2-0 up, happy days, do you know what I mean? This is all right, this is okay. And then all of a sudden it's sort of bang bang bang, oh, what is going on? And I remember phoning Ray at 2-2 saying, what's going on, Ray, what's going on? He said, oh, it's 3-2 now. But that's what this football's all about, because you just never know what's going to happen. From, you know, everybody can actually physically beat everybody. I mean, even with that Heybridge Swifts game at the weekend against Abley, you know, I mean, two goals in the last, you know, in injury time, 91 and 97 minutes to get Heybridge the victory and get their nomination for Team of the Week this week. So it's, you know, it's just an amazing way our games can be, you know, games can change. And goals as well, we say all the time on this show, is about the amount of goals that we seem to get at the 90 minutes, or between 85 and 90 minutes. I think we normally, the last time we looked, I think it's about 16 in one league.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. I think a lot of teams now just go to the end. So, a lot of teams go to the end, and, you know, obviously you make changes, it's really funny as a team when you're in front, and them last 5 or 10 minutes, for some reason, it just makes you a little bit nervous.
Yeah,
and some teams have got nothing to lose and just go for the game, and then they score one, and anything can happen after that. So,
well, hopefully, this should be Stuart on the other end of the line, if he's still there. Hello, Stuart.
Hi, David. You okay?
Yeah, not too bad, mate. It's that terrible answering machine that they've now got in the studio that picks up stuff very, very quickly, and people keep changing it to from one ring to two rings, and you just got to catch it just right. But sorry about that.
No worries.
How are you, sir, anyway? Because we haven't spoken to you for We haven't spoke to you for about a week, so we're just over 2 weeks, isn't it, I suppose, now, because of the runaway win for last week. So how's things going at your neck of the woods?
Yep, all busy, all good up at this end. And got pitched last week because we had a runaway winner, so there was no need for the pole.
And this week, I mean, we had some, I think this week we had some, for me, we had some good nominations this week. I mean, the likes of Haybridge winning with two goals that we were just saying in the last few minutes, and the likes of Lewis and Tonbridge Angels and Wharton Casuals again, seem to get in there. But, you know, and also Dulwich, you know, Dulwich as well for their, you know, well, it's got to be said, you know, two fantastic wins for them. I mean, winning the, you know, beating Margate twice. I mean, not many teams this season are going to do that. Not even Maidstone are going to beat them twice this year because they've already lost them already. So, you know, an amazing, you know, amazing result for them.
Yeah, when you sent them over, I'm surprised Redhill didn't a shout because I was looking through the non-league paper myself on Sunday morning. And I couldn't believe no one had nominated Redhill, so I felt obliged to put them in. They picked up a cracking result.
They did. I mean, I looked at it as well myself once you said it, I must admit, and I looked at it very quickly and went, Struth, yeah, I was quite surprised myself. And as we said, you know, it's people out there that, you know, nominations, I mean, a few times people have said, why wasn't my team nominated? Why wasn't my team nominated? And I said, well, you've got to, you know, send the email in, let us know. Let us know that you want to nominate your team because of the result you had that weekend, and you'll be on the list.
Yeah, exactly. It's just going to show people, get your team nominated and get it out there.
Mm, absolutely. So then, I suppose we should announce who's won week 9. I mean, I know now because I've got it in front of me, but I mean, I'll let you announce who's won it from in reverse order.
Yeah, well, this is a strange one. It's like, not last week, the week before, where we had a two horse race, and it was neck and neck, and there was a couple of votes in it. These two were fighting it out over the last couple of days, and it was incredibly close. So out of the six, I'll start from the bottom, and we'll knock the four off. Walton Casuals, Tunbridge Angels, Lewes and Redhill, 6th, 5th, 4th, 5th, 6th, 5th, 4th and 3rd position. And then Dulwich Hamlet came out on top, in the end, by over 100 votes. But yesterday they were leading, and then this morning, I looked at it this morning, and Haybridge Swiss had turned over a 100-vote deficit and got into the lead themselves. And they went in front by a good 50 votes, and then looked at it again this afternoon, this evening, and Dulwich Hamlet had done it again and overtook them by 100 votes. So there was frantic voting between the two teams there. They really went for it. And Dulwich Hamlet have come out on top by just over 100 votes from Haybridge Swiss.
How many votes did Dulwich get in the end itself?
They got 560.
So, you know, a good, you know, and say, must be, again, between the top two again, almost 1,000 votes between the top two again.
Yep, in fact, it's just over 1,000 between them. Just under 1,200 votes altogether, and just over 1,000 between the top two. Yeah, it's a two-horse race. It would be nice if a few more can get involved and try and get their teams nominated and try and make a bit of a fight for the pole, but at least some are cottoning onto it.
Yeah, it's a shame. I must admit, it is a shame. I mean, I know someone said to me, we were just discussing it earlier on, and saying that, you know, I did have somebody say to me, but the team with the biggest amount of fans will be the team that will win it every week. And as I said, well, that isn't the case, because the likes of Brighton Sea Region have won it two times, and, you know, Thamesmead have won it, and the likes of Great Wakering Rovers have won it, Hive Town have won it, and I think the only real sort of big sides that have won it so far is Guernsey, and this week in Dulwich Hamlet. So, you know, it just completely defeats the object. It's a matter of how much you promote that you want to win that, you know, award of being Ryman Team of the Week, and if you want to win it, then you'll go out and put the effort into it. You know, I mean, there's been teams that have been on it two or three times and finished sort of second from bottom sort of three or four occasions. So it's, you know, it depends if people, you know, put the effort into to get it out there, as we said, you know, a couple of weeks ago, like Guernsey did with the ITV you know, news channel. Then, you know, if you put the effort into it, then people will vote.
Yeah, and it just gives you that little bit of recognition as well for what you've done in the week. Like you said, Guernsey put it onto the ITV channel down there. That got some recognition. I think it was I can't remember, I think it was Burgess Hill or Great Wakering, I think it was the very first week, they publicised it really well. And then it was on all sorts of down there. So it's just how the team goes about, the club goes about and publishes it. It's been on a few forums. I've seen where the votes are coming from. It's come from a few of the team's forums. It's getting, the word's getting spread out.
I mean, I'm hoping next week that one of the nominations next week will be Barkingside. I mean, I've got my fingers crossed, but we'll see if Matt and the team can pull that one off for us.
I'll keep an eye out for that result, then I'll look for that one on Saturday lunchtime.
That one is vital because, of course, they are playing our closest rivals, Needham Market, at the weekend. So, it'll be interesting, shall we say.
It's secretly rooting for them.
Yeah, it's second versus 22nd at the weekend. So, we'll see how it pans out.
It'd be good to get that one, won't it?
It would be nice. It would be nice, but who knows? Football's a funny game, as someone once said. We just never know what's... what's going to happen. But I mean, who won your one at the North this week?
The one up here was won by a team called Winsford United. They were 2-0 down with 17 minutes to play, something like that, and they ended up winning 3-2 with the last kick of the game. They've not played a game for 5 weeks or something like that since just before Christmas, so that's a fantastic result for them.
Yeah, fantastic. I think it would all like that if it was 2-0 down. I mean, sounds like a Thames meet to me, that one does.
Yeah, something like that.
Listen, Stuart, it's been magic speaking to you again today, but hopefully we'll speak to you again next week. And, let's hope you're saying and the winner of week 10 is Barkingside. So we'll keep our fingers crossed.
I'll keep an eye out on that result on Saturday afternoon, evening, and I'll keep an eye out for that and see if they get a mention.
Yeah, no worries. Magic, thanks again, Stuart.
Thanks a lot,
Dave. Thanks, mate.
See you next week.
We'll do, mate. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And it's really kind of him. He runs, I don't know if you follow him on Twitter at all, but it's Review Non-League. So if you want to follow Stuart on Twitter, it's Review Non-League. And of course, he does everything non-league. A lot of it's to do with the Northern teams in non-league, but he's just now started to pick up even on his Twitter feed and on his... website now, a lot to do with the Rama League since he's sort of got a link in with the show. So if you want to follow him, it is Review Non-League. So see if you can get hold of Stuart for that as well. But we'll quickly have a quick look at these tables. And of course, still top while we're waiting for Nick to phone in. It's still top in the Rama Premies. Is Maidstone on 62 points, Margate on 59, Dulwich Hamlet now on 58. Hendon now on 51 and East Thurrock on 51. I did have a quick look at the betting before I came out, and I know none of us are allowed to bet anymore, but it is a four-horse race in the Rama Prem according to the betting, and it is Maidstone, Margate, Dulwich and Hendon.
Dulwich must be great odds.
I think so, yeah. And then at the bottom, it's Bury Town, Harrow Borough, AFC Hornchurch, VC The Athletic and Whittam in that order on 21, 25 points and 26 points. In the Rama North, according to the betting, it's a two-team battle. And in they've only got Harlow Town on there. They've got top with 73 points. Needham Market on 67, but of course they've got three games in hand. Wroxham next on 55, Brentwood Town on 54, AFC Sudbury on 51 and Dereham Town on 50 at the bottom. It's Burnham Ramblers at the bottom with 13, Cray Wanderers with 17, Barkingside with 22, Chatham Town on 29, Romford on 30, Redbridge and Haybridge Swifts on 31. And in the Rama South, it's Burgess Hill Town played 26 with 68 points. And you just have to read it out. 121, drawn 5, lost none. Is their record. In second place, it's Faversham Town with 68, Folkestone the Victor with 61, Mersham with 60 and Worthing with 52. And they still say that's a four-team race for that one, according to the betting. But there we go. And at the bottom is Horsham with 23, Ramsgate 25, Redhill 25, Hive Town 30 and Walton Casuals on 31. And I know we had, as we said, we had Tony Gowell on last week. And it was quite funny, actually, because he was absolutely excited because he'd managed to get out of the relegation zone. He said he's now going to start buying a non-league paper again now because he's managed to get out the relegation zone. So it will certainly be interesting because they won again on Saturday, but then they lost, I think it was last night they lost. So But they're doing quite well now. So they're actually, I think they're 6 points out of the playoffs. But I know it's a league that we don't play in, but I mean, Do you see all of a sudden Guernsey on the march?
Maybe, yeah. I know quite a bit about the Ryman South, obviously, from where we come from. A lot of our local teams are from Kent, actually, in it, and we know quite a lot of them. So, Guernsey, I'm not too sure, to be fair. No one's going to catch Burgess Hill. I think they've lost three games all year, two to Dartford and
now Margate.
Difficult place to go. We went down there a couple of years ago in the FA Cup, and it's a tough place to go. The lad up front, Harding, Pats, look very good players scoring goals. But I tell you, one of the teams that have done really well, and I know, is Faversham. I think they've done exceptionally well. Ray Turner over there has done a great job, and good club. They've come through the ranks like we did, and even though it's not going to be a two-horse race, I really hope they push and try and get up there as well, because they work really hard. But it's similar to our league. It's tough, but you just got to put a run together and see what happens. Now's the business end of the season, so be interested. Someone from the top 10 will make a run for it.
Mm. And I say, looking at Guernsey, a few weeks ago they were sort of like in about 4 or 5 points off of, down the bottom. They're now sort of up into 11th. They're now 12 points off the playoffs. The others are sort of a little bit of a distance after that. So Worthing is sort of the one to catch on 52.
Yeah.
And of course they've got a game in hand on that as well. And of course they've got Ross Allen back as well, which will be a massive boost for them.
The travelling's going to come into that either way as well. With games being called off or at home or away, they have to get, teams will have to travel midweek, which is difficult.
Mm.
So it comes into their favour, or if they have to travel over here midweek. So, that will play a big part of the season for them as well. But they're a big club over there. Mm. They've got great support. And I'm sure if they start winning games, they'll all go on a run.
I think that's what it's going to be now. I think it's all about who's going to play what, and with the games and with the weather and everything else. And I suppose the teams that are sort of, so he's one from each division. So Whiteleaf have got the advantage with that, with their 3G pitch. Harlow here, and of course Maidstone as well, where at least they'll get those games in where the others are going to struggle.
No, they will. The 3G pitches, we've got one as training, and you'll get your home games in, but your away games, it can backfire on you as well when you're playing on maybe heavy pitches and it's not what you're used to with the football you play on. But obviously if you've got the games on the board, you need the points in the bag, and if teams have got to play Tuesday, Thursday, like what's happened at the end of the season in some years, it's a struggle to catch them points up. So I'd rather have the points in the bag than try and catch teams.
I think someone said, I'm not sure if it's the same in the Prem and in the South, but I know it definitely is in the North, that up till now, every team should have played 31 games.
Mm.
So everyone should have played 31 games. And when you actually flick down, it's quite funny, when you actually flick down the actual Ryman North to see who's actually played 31 games, there's only one team that's played 31 games. And it is Harlow that have played the 31 games, but it's weird because, as we were saying, and I think Ray didn't even realise when we were speaking to him the other day, when we started the show in at the beginning of December, we were looking, even with Nick, and we were saying to Nick, Struth, you've seen the amount of games that Dereham have got to play in December, the amount of games that Wroxham have got to play, and then we just flicked into Harlow just out of curiosity, and they had two more than both of those two teams had to play. I think we had nine, and it was 7 and 6 or whatever it was. But then when he went into Needham, they only had four to play in there. And we were four games behind. But when we came out of December, we've now actually played three games more than what Needham have played. So it's quite incredible where the weather does take a grip. And if you get the luck of the fixtures, maybe if you get some of the grounds that that are notorious for getting called off, and if you've had them sort of September, October maybe, early November, and you haven't got them in those December, January, February months, you might then maybe
catch them all up. It's true that we went up to Needham on Saturday, and the pitch was extremely heavy, and we've had one game called off on our pitch in the last three years, so we're happy. But also, you come into it that if your game gets called off, it's got to be rearranged within the 40 days. That goes to a Tuesday night. You're in the bad weather, that could get called off. Now, I think you'll find in this month they're calling a lot of league games off for the League Cup.
Mm.
I think Grays have had the last 3 weeks called off games because they're obviously playing Chessant, and again that was off again this week. So we lost our game to Sudbury in the week as well because of the League Cup. So if you are Harlow and you can always play out there, you can keep yourself ticking over. Mm. And as well as going on a run, if you're missing weeks, that's hard to sort of come back.
Mm.
So it will work in the advantage.
Because someone said to us, I'd rather, I think it was Danny said, I'd rather have the points I'd rather have the points in the bag than having the games in hand. Mm. And I thought, oh, I don't know about that too much. You know, look at that. We could be 7 points clear if we win all those games that we had in hand.
Yeah.
And we came out of those games that we had at the end of it, and we were actually 3 points behind.
Yeah.
So we'd actually dropped, I think, about 10 points in the games that we had to play. You know, three to you, and I think it was a couple to Cray.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
it ended up, and it just ended up sort of where you were sort of thinking, everybody was thinking, yeah, yeah, happy days. And all of a sudden it was like, oh, dear me.
Yeah.
And everybody's sort of scratching their brows thinking, this ain't going to be, you know.
Well, like I said, you've got to win them games. And when you're at the top or around the top, teams below you want to beat you.
Mm.
So as much as Needham, you know, I don't know what fixtures they've got in hand, and you know, they have got them games in hand, it's, you know, they could be playing you in one of them. You can, as well as going on a run, you can also go for a sticky patch.
Yeah, oh,
and
yeah.
Every team's got to have that. You had yours in a month or so ago. Yeah. You know, and all of a sudden, whatever you try and do as a manager, it don't work.
Yeah.
And you struggle. You get injury, suspensions, dodgy goals, bad refereeing decisions, which seem to happen quite regularly. And there you are.
Well, we've got someone on the phone now, and he's back. I don't know where he was last week. We'll find out. But it's the one and only Mr. Nick. How are you, Nick?
Oh, no, he's not. He's gone.
So we can carry on talking. He might call back in a minute with a bit of luck, but we lost Nick. But he'll call back from Norfolk. He's got a dodgy line up Norfolk, I think. But it'll be, here we go. See if we got him back. Hello, Nick.
Hello.
How are you, sir?
Is that a good old signal in Norfolk, you see? Can't get this far.
We were just saying that. We thought he might have been a dodgy one, or he was in the pub again.
No. I put my 50p in the machine, I don't think.
How are you, sir?
I'm all right, thank you. Yourself?
Yeah, not too bad. We missed you last week.
Yes, yeah, sorry I couldn't make it. Was it good?
It was very good, yeah. I mean, Mr. Gower and Mr. Letizia were in fine form, and as we were saying earlier on, I think before the show started, me and Key were discussing it, and the boss was in great spirits last week. I think Mr. Dyer got, quite a few barrels in the gun he got last week. It was quite a good one last week, I must admit.
Does Matt Letizia, does he actually support any team?
Well, Matt used to be, literally, Matt used to be, of course, the president, the life president at Guernsey. So, of course, he's no longer with them this year. But he did appear, I think, for one game when they were trying to get into the Ryman South, wasn't it? And
yeah.
They had quite a few games and they needed players, and he was on the bench for them at one stage. So and his brother's the secretary at Guernsey.
Mm. That's brilliant, isn't it, to keep a connection like that, and obviously with a name like that as well.
Yeah, I mean, I say he was in fine form. He was in, you know, say last week he was in fine form again. We were talking about Ross and a few of the other bits and bobs and a bit around his career as well last week, and was talking quite a bit about Soccer Saturday and talking really about non-league day and saying, wouldn't it be nice if it was non-league day that there was four panellists on there and one was watching a conference game, one was watching a Ryman game, one was watching a game from the Northern League and whatever else. And then, you know, literally you had some from all of them. So you had somebody across the board. So, Tony as well was, as I say, Tony Gale was just Tony Gale, just as bubbly as ever, when you see him on the TV to talking to him on the radio.
Yeah, this whole non-league day, you probably remember when we spoke last time, you know, it's being my bonnet, really, whenever they make it think as though it's, making an exception of it, you know, just for non-league day. Well, as though it's a little bit of lip service to a degree, you know, they could probably do more on a more regular basis, you know, to help out, I feel, but there we go.
As we said to him last week, we're still quite surprised that we haven't got to that situation where there isn't a non-league TV programme of some sorts, even if it was an hour TV programme, it was on at 10, 11 o'clock at night on a Sunday or a Monday or something on a Sky or a BBC Two or Channel 4, Channel 5 or, you know, or something like that, you know, and... You know, it is a bit of a surprise that we haven't got something like that on the TV yet, but hopefully we've, fingers crossed, as the non-league game starts to, you know, get bigger and bigger, that we might see me and you hosting it, Nick. You never know.
I mean, one thing we mustn't put the mockers on it is the fact that, you know, at least they are doing something, aren't they, which is the main thing. I mean, they could ignore it totally, so at least they are, you know, once or twice a year making something of it, but I just think it just annoys me that it's as though they're doing everybody a favour in non-league football by doing that, you know, when there's an international break. Well, you know, there's many more weeks of football that we all enjoy, obviously, outside of that. But we'll take care of ourselves, won't we? You know, we'll keep plodding on.
Absolutely. And, of course, the one team that will be looking forward to the next international break will be a certain team called Wroxham.
Yes, they will. I saw them last week, and they're still not playing as well as they were, say, a couple of months ago. And, talking to Stu Larson, the manager, and it's one of those things, isn't it? It's difficult to actually put your finger on, you know, why performances and levels should drop, you know, without there being any rhyme or reason. They haven't really had a break. You know, it's not as if they've had a lot of games called off. The only thing I would say is that for the type of football they do play, then the pitch is obviously now being really heavy, probably aren't conducive to that, but it's the same for everybody. You know, and some of them are looking a little bit tired, but we all know it's a long, old season. So, I mean, they're hanging in there at the moment, I think. You know, I think that's what we can say about Wroxham. You know, that they got themselves into that really good position, and now they just need to make sure that they don't fall out of it. But obviously, pressure is being put on around them, you know, from teams below. And Brentwood, to be fair, I was really impressed with Brentwood last Saturday, you know, and that was that's the least they deserved, probably, for the point from that game. It was a typical game of two halves, really. Wroxham shaded the first, but Brentwood came really strong in the second.
That was a good result, I must admit. I enjoyed that result, 1-1. I think that was a good one.
Well, that would have been good for you guys, yeah. But it's, with you, obviously, Harlow and Needham Market, the gap is now 6 points, isn't it? I know they've got 3 games in hand, but they've got to win those. But from our point of view, you know, we're still in good shape with Wroxham in third and Dereham Town in sixth. And as far as Dereham are concerned, that they've started to pick it up again, without a doubt. You know, they've started to get on a bit of a roll. They've found the confidence. They had their blip. And I think that's what Stu Larter is hoping, that maybe they're having their blip now and they'll come out of it and, go on a strong run for the rest of the season.
Well, of course, and Dereham also as well could, you know, if it stays a two-horse race at the top of the table, could have a big say in where the title goes as well, because they've got Needham twice.
Yes, they've got Needham twice, and they've got them looking forward to that on Tuesday. It's slightly annoying, that one, because that was a rearranged game anyway, wasn't it? Dereham against Needham Market on Tuesday. And on Tuesday, Wroxham, I believe their Norfolk Senior Cup game is being rearranged for next Tuesday. It's against a team who play, you know, 3 or 4 leagues lower, but that's been rearranged, and they were due to play Cray, I think. So I guess that one has been pushed back a little bit, which surprised me, because I thought Ryman, you know, the Ryman League can get a little bit touchy sometimes, can't they, about rearranged games because of local cup games. But I think that's what's happened anyway.
And you got Wroxham coming up then, Keith?
Yeah, a week on Saturday, Wroxham come to us. So, we're looking to put a bit of a better performance in when we went up there a couple of months ago. Strong team at home. Wroxham, very hard to beat. So I think their home form will keep them in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting, without a doubt. You know, and Sudbury, you know, changing manager. And I think that's for Jamie Godbold and Andy Reynolds, who were at Kirkley, they've gone to Sudbury, and that's a brilliant appointment for them. And I think it's a good one for Sudbury, because they are an up and coming duo, if you like. I mean, Andy Reynolds was a really good keeper. They both played for Lowestoft Town, you know, when they got to the Vars final. And Jamie Godbold is a very respected coach with the Suffolk FA. I think he works for the FA as well, and as a regional coordinator or something. So, you know, he knew the Sudbury setup very, very well, because he works for them anyway. So it probably surprised a few people at the appointment, but when you look at it, it's probably not a big surprise.
Yeah, I think the race for the playoffs as well. I mean, forget about the top two as such, but the race for those playoffs is going to be really interesting. I mean, the likes of, you just read the names, you know, Wroxham, Brentwood, AFC Sudbury, Dereham, Averley, Thurrock, you know, and then there'll be people maybe even phoning in and showing, don't forget about Brighton Sea and Sutton, yep. And, you know, and even Thamesmead.
Brighton Sea's a really tough place to go to. Mm. You know, they've come on in leaps and bounds in the last few months. So, I think there'll be a couple of teams you've mentioned there drop out. Sudbury's a very big club, and as Nick said, I was a little bit surprised with the appointment. I thought Danny Laws might have actually took that full time, because he's got the experience, he's done really well, and he's a great manager as well. So obviously the two lads that have come in have also done very well, but they're going to have quite a lot of player knowledge behind them anyway.
I think after our Twitter chat as well the other week, Nick, there'll be at least one Wroxham fan that will be over the moon that it wasn't Stuart.
His name was in the frame when it was, but I don't think that was ever going to be a bit of a reality, really. I mean, I gather that when David Batch went, when he went to St Neots, then he suggested that Steve Eastall, his assistant, should take over. But I gather after discussions that didn't work out, so Steve ended up going with Batchy to St Neots, and then obviously there was that void left. But I agree. I think, you know, Danny Laws was probably on the tips of a lot of people's tongues. But I wish Jamie and Andy well, because they're really good guys, and they did a terrific job at Kirkley. I know it's in the Eastern Counties League, but I wouldn't say they turned the club around, but they got them playing really good football. And it's not just the first team they look at; they look at the whole issue, if you like. And I think with Sudbury, they've got that set up which is ideal for their way of thinking.
Mm. I mean, they just look at it now. I mean, Dereham now, of course, sitting in sixth, just outside the playoffs, point outside. But of course, when you start looking at it, they've got two games in hand on Sudbury, same amount of games on Brentwood, but three games in hand on Wroxham.
Yeah, they are. They have, and they've got to play each other coming up. I think it's March, April time when Dereham have to go to Wroxham, and obviously with Dereham having won at their place, that's going to be an interesting one. But they got themselves in a really good position. I mean, you could argue that Brentwood are probably in the stronger position of anybody in those in the chasing pack behind Harlow and Needham. And as I say, you know, I was impressed with them on Saturday. But I agree, you know, just heard Brightling Sea Regent mentioned there, and I've seen them once this season. They played Dereham, and I think they're a bit unfortunate when they lost to them. And I'm actually looking forward to it, because we're staying with relatives in Essex at the weekend, so I'm going down to the Brightling Sea Dereham game. So I'm looking forward to. I've never been to that ground, so I'm looking forward to the visit.
That's a nice.
Don't know what it's like. There's a snigger in the background now. What's it like?
it's quaint.
Yeah. park your car down the road and walk round the back of the pitch, I think it is.
That's tough. Yeah.
They've got a lot
of work
to do.
Yeah.
A lot of work to do.
Have they?
But
yeah.
But in saying that, I mean, one of the most, I think, the grounds that I've been to this year, and I haven't been, you know, I say I haven't been to too many, but a lot more this year than I've been to before, and you are made to feel very, very welcome by the guys there.
Yeah,
you know, Terry and the guys down, and even the manager Jamie as well. You know, you just go into the ground, and it's a fantastic. I know when we went down there, they had an issue where they didn't have no one on the burger bar, and they couldn't get no one for it, and they were devastated because they said, like, you know, we've not had a crowd this big year, and you know, for some time, and then we ain't got we can't make the money because there's burger bars open.
Yeah.
But you know, they'll tell you the story about how they managed to. I think they got one of their stands off of eBay as well, so it's
I remember that. Yeah,
yeah.
That,
so it's but I think it would be, or will be, once they've done the, you know, done the upgrades that they need to do on it, it will be an interesting and a quite a nice ground. But
yeah, they were lovely people. You're right. They treated us really well as well, and like I said, they're doing really well on the side.
And of course, I mean, I'm just, you were talking about Brentwood then, Nick. I mean, you look at Brentwood and you think, so well, if they win their games in hand, all of a sudden they're only 6 points behind Harlow. So, you know, and I know I was saying earlier on, I was looking at some of the betting sites to see who was favourites for different leagues. There was four in the betting for the South and for the Prem, but only two in the betting for the North. But then you look at Brentwood and say, well, hang on a minute, you know, if they win these games in hand, all of a sudden they are, you know, right up behind the back of Needham and Harlow.
Yeah, and they looked a very strong unit to me. I mean, the work rate was very impressive, I found, for them. Well, you know, I guess they do that all the time, but they were, you know, I mean, they were 1-0 down, they came back really strong, you know, and but it was the overall team effort that really caught my eye. You know, I'm not saying that they've got any probably prolific up front, if you like, because they didn't hurt Wroxham an awful lot, but it was just the pressure they put on was quite staggering, really. You know, they pushed Wroxham all the way back in that second period, you know. And you could see the equaliser was going to come. I mean, it was without a doubt.
Because they lost their main man to, was it Michael Brothers that went to Needham Market?
Brothers went from Brighton, you see, to Needham Market. Yeah, he played against us on Saturday. And again, knew him from Leeston. Great player. Great player.
The nice thing is, I mean, obviously, I'm based in Norfolk, and an awful lot of the football I see is in Norfolk. But it's great when I get the opportunity to go to other places. You know, I was last Saturday, I was due to go down to Kent for the FA Vars game between one of our sides. Well, the only Norfolk side left, Norwich United. They were playing down at Ashford, or should have been on Saturday, and that was called off, so I couldn't go to that. But the rearranged game, which was Tuesday, I couldn't get away from my day job to get down there, so I missed that. They won 5-0, which is ironic, isn't it? So, but it's just great to be able to go to different grounds, and I'm really looking forward to going down to Brighton and seeing viewing what's on offer.
Nick, are you coming to Thamesmead a week on Saturday?
Week on Saturday will be the next round of the Vars. I think, is that the 7th of Feb?
No, that's the 7th, 31st.
Oh, the week before. I'll have to see.
Well, I mean, I'm just looking at Dereham's next three games. I mean, it's they're interesting. So, you know, I mean, you've got, let's say, Dereham definitely with Matt's got an away trip, as you just said, to Brighton 2 Regent. Then the one that they must win on Tuesday against Needham. And then, of course, then they've got, on Saturday, the following Saturday, they've got Tilbury. And that won't be easy, I don't think, at the minute, because Tilbury seem to be on the up as well.
There's a few sides have started to just turn a little bit of a corner, haven't they? So, I totally agree that maybe there's one or two sides who will drop out of the playoffs, but equally, I think there's going to be one or two, and there's nearly always one that comes out of the pack, chasing pack, that you don't expect, which ends up, whoever gains momentum now, I think it's going to be key, you know, because you do see teams go on in various divisions when you look around, you think, wow, they were near the bottom not long ago, and all of a sudden, they found their way up the table. But it's going to be, I think you can't discount an awful lot of teams from getting in the playoffs. So, just got to keep fingers crossed that both our Norfolk sides, finish the season off with a flourish and keep strong, keep hold the nerve to a degree.
And of course, Wroxham with Morden Triptree at the weekend.
Yep.
And then of course you've got your Norfolk County Cup game, and then of course Keith just said you've got Thamesmead on the Saturday.
Yeah, I think with Wroxham, they've just got to, get back to basics and such. It's just that little spark has just gone, out of their game just a little bit. And as Stu Larter said, it's very difficult to really understand why that should happen. Every team gets that, don't they, at some stage during the season when all of a sudden your zip goes out of your game, and those who are scoring a lot of goals aren't getting as many. Christy Finch hasn't scored as many in the last few weeks. But it's just, it's not just down to him, is it? It's down to everybody else. And it's going to be interesting to see how the next two or three games pan out for them, really.
Mm. And of course, with this top two, I'm just looking at the games as well. I mean, Needham Market, of course, Barkingside this week, then Dereham, and then away to Morden Triptree on the Saturday as well.
Needham are a strong side, aren't they? I mean, so to a Harlow, I think it's going to arguably going to be that. That's how the season finishes. Those two, in whatever position, I certainly wouldn't say it's going to be as it stands right now. I think that's the nice, intriguing thing about it, because they are, two strong sides. And I've spoken to Matt and I've spoken to Stu Larter, and they both say, and some of the players, they say that, the league isn't lying. It's that those two are the best two teams in the division. So it's not a surprise that they are there. It's just who is going to be, unfortunately for one of them, they're not going to go up, are they? Immediately.
They're going to have to settle
for a playoff place.
And the funny thing is, which is the way the fixtures have panned out, the last but one game of the fixture is Harlow away to Needham Market. So
yeah, brilliant.
It's it could end up being a title decider, shall we say, on that in the end of April or middle of April. So it will certainly be an interesting game coming up today. And I dare say the Needham Market fans will be hoping that by that sort of time they've got it wrapped up and and you know, and basically at the end of that Harlow game, they're actually being presented with the trophy just to rub it into the Harlow fans. And I suppose the Harlow fans will be hoping to go there needing a point to accept the trophy after the Thamesmead game. So it's I think it's going to be, as you say, it's going to be an interesting run. But then again, you know, if we get to the situation like last year where, you know, likes of ECD and Whittam, you know, kept slipping up, and it was almost, well, you can have it, no, we'll have it, no, you can have it. You know, somebody nearly slipped in last year, and who's to say that if that happens come the end of the season and the nerves start hitting, that somebody like a Brentwood don't come in and, you know, and pinch the title at the last. And, of course, our top tipster, Mr. Adam Dennehy, at the beginning of the season, nominated Brentwood to become bottom. And, of course, the team he nominated to come bottom last year was VCD, went on to win the title. So you've got that as well. So, you know, that's still looming around.
Yeah, I mean, just going back to that, the penultimate game, I think, you know, obviously those who've got no affiliation to either club will hope that it will go down to that as the decider, because, for one, you'll get a fantastic crowd, and it's with so much riding on it, that'll be a brilliant finale to the side, assuming those two sides are still in those positions. But, yeah, I mean, so, from what I saw on Saturday, you know, if Brentford can maintain that, then they are going to be serious contenders, I'd have thought.
What about Norwich United then? Are they still on the, closer coming up?
Well, I mean, obviously they put their application in, you know, that obviously you've got to, haven't you? You know, and they've shown the intent that they would like to, and they're having a great season. I mean, they're still in, I mean, they're 6 points clear in the Eastern Counties League, so that's looking good. This is now the furthest they've ever got in the FA Vars. That's looking good. They're still in the quarterfinals of the League Cup. And, you know, they're in the Norfolk Senior Cup semi-finals as well. So they're firing on four fronts at the moment. So they are, from what I've seen, the strongest side in that division. It's, you know, they've now got the decision to make, haven't they, as to are they going to carry on and go through with that application, you know. It's, I mean, they don't get big crowds. The facilities are good. I wouldn't have thought they'd have an awful lot of work to do if they were to make that step up. But they, you know, probably average 60, 70, something like that. And I know a lot of clubs do average that number, if not less, in the Rahman Division 1 North and South anyway. So it's obviously the backing behind it is the issue. But I still think that one is not 100% what's going to happen there. It's going to be an interesting one to look out for, really.
Who else will be challenging them to come in then?
Well, one or two of the other sides who've put their hat in the ring, there's no way they're going to win the league, to be honest. They're being pushed at the moment by God Manchester, and I'm not quite sure if God Manchester Rovers actually said that they would, you know, be interested in going up anyway. I don't know if they were one of those sides. If they are, then great, because that, at least that keeps that boiling over a little bit. But the way United play, I think that's 11 on the bounce. They've won in all competitions, you know, and the way they dismantled Ashford on Tuesday apparently was very impressive. It could have been 10, I think, you know, without any form of exaggeration. I think they could quite easily have hit double figures against Ashford on Tuesday. Whether Ashford had a bad day, I don't know, but Norwich United were very impressive.
So still set up then for a playoff final between Wroxham and Dereham then?
Well, that'd be brilliant for us. That would be superb for us. I think from their point of view, as long as they, you know, first things first, just get yourselves in the playoff. And there's still, as we know, there's a lot of points to play for, and an awful lot can be lost, can't it? You know, and in two or three games, all of a sudden you can be out of the picture. Equally, in two or three games, you can be in a very strong position and virtually have nailed it. But I think there's still a number of twists and turns yet, and I don't think it's going to be. I don't think those four sides who are in that playoff zone now will necessarily be there at the end of the season.
Yeah, because I mean, I was. I mean, looking at the top two ones. I mean, even that. I mean, I know Harlow this week have got their bogey side. We've not beaten Thurrock since they've been back in the league, back in the Rahman North. So that will be interesting on Saturday.
They're the team I think that will get in. Thurrock.
It's all right.
I think
really
pushing the playoffs by the end.
You're right.
And, you know, and of course Needham as well. I think in two games in the beginning of April, we've got Needham at the beginning of April. We've got Wroxham and Dereham game after each other. So one, I think one's on a Monday, one's on a Saturday, and one's on a Tuesday. So, and I think they've still got to go to the likes of Tilbury away and this sort of things of, you know, grounds that will possibly get called off, which then could even backlog it up a little bit more. So as you say, I think it's certainly going to be interesting, and I don't think there's anybody out there that's going to write down and be 100% correct on where people are going to finish from first to fifth.
No, and I think first and second probably as is, but I would like to say who's going to be in which, and you know, there's always a movement inside or out of a playoff zone, and hopefully, you know, Dereham obviously are just outside it at the moment, and they're looking strong to get in there, and. I just think it's a really tough one to say who's actually going to finish up in the end, which is the best thing from a league point of view. I think it's wonderful, you know, that it's going to keep us guessing, I think, for an awful long time, right to the end of the season.
I think the one thing that we're all sort of missing out on as well will be the fact that of course if the likes of Brighton C, Peacehaven and Telscombe, to name a couple, don't get the ground grading up to state by a certain period of time, that could really sort of throw a spanner in the works as well with reprieves and people. You know, Brighton City were to, you know, as we were laughing and joking with them last week, I think it was not last week, before, we said, look, you know, you're having meetings to say this is what we've got to do to get it ground graded up to Ryman North levels, but look where you are. You could be in the Ryman Prem and you'd have to call something else to try and go up into the Ryman Prem. So it's all sort of weird and wonderful things that could still happen off the field that could probably even affect playoffs, even you know, maybe even playoffs going into it.
Well, yeah, so. the work's got to be done by the 31st, which is before the playoffs. Mm. So we've had this before as well. And like I said, Brighton, you see, you've got quite a bit of work to do. And we went to Peacehaven this year as well, and they've got absolute tons to do. So that does make a massive difference.
Mm.
It's big pressure financially. It's a massive pressure, isn't it, on clubs, you know, and these people who we know, you know, for example, you know, talking about Brighton, so I know the amount of work and the amount of money that Wroxham had to put in, you know, to get their ground to the standard, and if Brighton still got to do a similar amount, then I really feel for them, because, you know, these people work so hard to keep clubs going anyway and to keep the progression going, and then obviously, you know, people have to dig into the pockets and find money from other ways and so on. So I've got every sympathy with them. You know, it's a big decision to make. You want to keep progressing, but that costs money, you know, and a lot of effort from people who have put an awful lot of time and effort into a club anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Nick, it's been fantastic talking to you again. Hopefully we'll speak to you again next week. Next week we've got Kestrel in the studio, which are the 3G specialists. So they'll be in the studio next week. So if we've got a load of games being called up over the weekend, it could be an interesting conversation.
Yeah, it could. That'd be good.
Okay, mate. No problems. I'll speak to you then.
Okay. Cheers.
See you, mate. Bye-bye.
There's one thing that's just broken, and it would be, I think, to say out on the programme now, and I've just literally seen it out the corner of my eye as when it's come up on the Twitter feed from Dan Wilson, and basically it's just come up that the Clacton football manager has suffered serious injuries in a car crash. So we wish all the very, very best to him, and also to the club, and of course to his family as well. So we'll keep you informed, and if Dan's there and keeps us informed during the show, if he gets any more information, then we'll bring that to you. But sorry to bring that sad news to you, but while we're trying to digest that in the studio, we're going to get some news, and we'll be back after these news and messages. And this is the Ryman Roundup Show. And I think what we'll do, actually, do you mind if we just quickly read the statement out first, Keith? We'll read this out first, and then we'll give people sort of half an hour or so to digest what I'm about to tell them, and then they can email us in at ryman@hawksradio.co.uk. So it's ryman@hawksradio.co.uk. And if you've got any messages for Keith, or, of course, Gary when he comes on later on, or anything to do with Horsham and the decision that happened, I think it was last night or the night before, then also email us in as well, and we'll read those out. But first of all, this was given to me by Cameron from Horsham. So we're going to read this statement out. It's a statement from him as a as a supporter, and it's also a statement as well from the Horsham chairman as well. So I'll read these out for you. So the headline of it is Horsham District Council vote against a football ground for Horsham Football Club. And it's from Cameron, so Horsham support. It says, on the 20th of January, Horsham District Council voted against a proposed football ground for Hot Oast. Many people thought this was a big shock result. I believe it was extremely unfair on the people of Horsham that our own council has voted against the ground. Horsham have been homeless for many years. I really did believe that this was the perfect location for the club to go. 1,800 people signed a petition for the ground to be approved. This would be a modest home, virtually hidden behind trees on existing leisure land next to Horsham Golf and Fitness. It would have provided a safe all-weather 3G pitch, which could have been used by the entire local community, including our own youth teams of under-15s, 16s and 18s, as well as other adult and children's teams in Horsham area, who either have nowhere to play or train or face dangerous frozen and waterlogged playing fields in the winter. Many people seem shocked and saddened for the result, why councillors rejected the ground. These included not being able to walk to the ground, no footpaths or bicycle paths, and also horse riders. It has been very emotional last days for Horsham. People have worked so hard on this application. We will not stop fighting. This is a very special and family-run club. We will win one day. From Keith Borrett, the Horsham chairman, it says, firstly, let me thank everybody who turned out tonight to support Horsham Football Club in the planning application and the councillors, the countless number of fans who couldn't be present but have been so supportive in other ways, including their messages of support. I'm not going to hide the fact that all the board members are bitterly disappointed at the outcome of the new ground application decision, for which we have hoped to secure a favourable decision at the first attempt. As the two applications were linked, it was then inevitable there would be a shortened discussion on our plans for the Holbrook Club, as that was not going to be approved in isolation. In advance of tonight's hearing, the board had considered that not getting two applications approved first time round was a distinct possibility and started planning accordingly. Whilst it's too early tonight to confirm our next steps, we will be meeting with our technical and legal advisors in the next few days. Horsham District Council voted against the application of a new ground at Hops Oast, despite it having a positive officer's recommendation and no statutory consultee opposing it. I am, however, grateful to the councillors who spoke in favour and supported us in the chamber. Whilst this decision creates uncertainty for Horsham Football Club, it also creates uncertainty for the Holbrook Club, whose long-term security was tied to the club getting the deal before the proposed at both locations. One tweet I saw come through whilst I was still in the chambers after the vote was, hope the board has the resolve to appeal. Be assured there is no lack of resolve tonight and there is no intention of consigning the last 6 years of hard work to the scrap heap. My thoughts, I say very, very quickly on that, is it's the same sort of situation for me as with Cray Wanderers. It's just amazing if we're stopping it because there's no footpaths and there's no cycle paths, put them in. What is the issue with the council putting them in? You've got a leisure facility that the whole town can use. It is just brain numbing that a council can do that to a club, you know, that by the sounds of things is as he's put on there. And I know through experience in the club here, 3G surface, it's become a community club. We've have schools coming in playing here. We've now got a full-time academy. We've got over 250 boys and girls playing football here weekly. As you saw tonight, Keith, the pitch was packed with kids tonight playing football. That didn't happen here 18 months ago. We didn't even have one single youth side here. The club has completely changed around. If it wasn't for the 3G surface, and I know they're going to have a 3G surface, and that's not only what they're looking for, but that 3G surface has basically saved Harlow Town Football Club. And for a council then to come out to Horsham and for Cray at the time as well, you know, and not to allow these clubs to have, you know, purpose-built grounds with pitches to serve the community. Surely that's what it's all about, isn't it? To serve the community.
Well, you hope so. You know, that's what you're looking for the youth of today for something to do and to get off the streets. And you know, I know Gary Hillman went through at Cray, and hopefully they're coming up with something. New now, and you know, they were even going to put the footpaths and roads in. It wasn't going to cost anything, and you know, there's too many things saying about at the moment. If you listen to most of the radio shows with football, talk sport, things like that, there's not enough grassroots facilities compared to what other countries are doing. And that's exactly right. And as you said, the first thing I see when I walked in the ground was all the kids out on the pitch. And, you know, we go down to Mason, I've seen it, we've got it as well. And it just keeps them off the streets. And you're actually putting something back in. And the local community have got somewhere to go as well. And for councillors that just drive me absolute nuts. We've had the issues, we've still got the same issues as well. And, you know, they're not asking for handouts, they're not asking for the council to give them the money. You know, there's plenty of funding out there, I'm sure. And, you know, they'd rather maybe stick something, a monument up somewhere. We've got absolutely no relevance whatsoever than have somewhere where 1,000 kids can go and train and progress in the next year. And I feel really strongly about things like this. And, you know, clubs like Cray, Horsham, even, you know, like we said, Grays have been looking to try and get back, and other clubs that are ground sharing at the moment. You know, there's great opportunities for funding as well, and they do need their local councils to help. And instead of sort of sitting behind a desk, they need to go and help clubs like this out. So I sympathise with Fulsham. Hopefully it will keep going, and that they'll win in the end.
Yeah, it's just when I read about it the first time, when Cameron contacted me on Twitter, like he does on quite a regular basis, and it was just mind blowing that these people. You know, as you just said, sitting glass houses basically, and just saying, no, sorry, you're not having that. No, sorry, you're not having that. And then, you know, some of these times when people make decisions, you know, make these sort of type of decisions, give a legitimate excuse.
That's right.
You know, because there's no paths, there's no bicycle. Put them in then.
That's exactly right. Well, I think, you know, I'm not giving Horsham any ideas, but with the kids sort of thing, what they need to do is look at what other local boroughs are, how many kids, you know, that their local team are actually doing. I said, I know around in Thamesmead, there's 10,000 kids in Thamesmead. And that local community need to look after them 10,000 kids. Instead of going, oh, we need the football, this is what we're giving them 10,000 kids. How many primary schools they got? All the schools at Thamesmead come and use our 3G. And they have a local midweek league for just them primary school kids. Horsham and that are going to give that. They don't even look at that. And that's the angle I've got to go with. Yeah, it suits the football club, but every town should have a football club that their little kids want to go and play for.
Well, I think my own personal view, just thinking about it, I mean, you know, why would a council, you know, do that? You know, no disrespect. I suppose the question I would probably be asking if I was a Horsham fan or even a Cray Wanderers fan or any fan that's looking at a new stadium, and the council say no to it, and you was involved in youth football, I think the first thing I'd be asking would be, I wonder, 3G pitch, will be paying the money to Horsham to use their 3G pitch. That's maybe, I don't know, £600-700 worth of fees that we're paying Horsham to use their 3G surface to do training, that we're not paying the council on a muddy waterlogged surface somewhere else in the town.
Yeah, maybe. I think they've got, you know, Horsham Council have got to look at what Dartford done when they built Prince's Park, and the local MP there was tremendous. I know that with experience of living local, and in the end they basically gave the whole development to Dartford with their 3G pitch, and they've built them another one next to it. And the amount of kids they've got there, you know, I think even Dartford last night hosted Celtic under-21s against Villarreal. You know, you're bringing everything in, and a lot of it all comes down to politics. And obviously, you know, we don't want to go in that on a football show, but the general election's coming up. There's mostly greenbelt land, funding, and people don't, councillors don't want to put their neck on the lines that maybe could push someone over not to vote for them. And I think that's maybe one of the deep down the biggest things. And it's criminal. I think, you know, Sport England and all that have got to say every local town should have a facility like this, and they should go, you know, and back it and get behind clubs like Horsham, Cray, and all the other clubs, and give them the funding they need, because they're not lining their own pockets, they're putting it back into the community as what you're doing outside, and that's what we should be looking at. Otherwise, the football in this country is never going to get any better.
No, not at all. I mean, you see the pictures on there, and you see the pictures of kids standing in muddy fields and up to the knees and ankles in it and stuff. And it is quite funny, I think, at this sort of time of year. You sort of get to the sort of summertime and people are saying, why do we need 3G pitches? Why do we need this? Why do we need that? And then we get to this time of the year and all those people that in sort of August, September, October are saying, why do we need them? Yeah. When we get to November, January, February, everybody's going, wow, we need more 3G surfaces. And they completely switch around.
The argument about 3G pitches on a main pitch is both. You know, I've got my own opinions on them, even though we've got them. But as I said, my little boy's just started playing football. He's 7 years old this year. Played his first year, and we went over on. He's had the last 4 weeks cancelled because of muds, as you said. And we went and played on a pitch on Sunday, and I'm not naming where we played, but it was so unsafe and dangerous. And, you know, otherwise they could have gone on a nice little 3G pitch, and that's how you encourage kids to play. If they're stuck in mud, they don't want to play, and you lose kids for a few years because they're cold, muddy, you know. And I'm not saying you should sort of hold their hands all the time, but they need the proper facilities and the proper tools to become better footballers. And only, you know, they start at that age, the rest will come through. So 3G pitches, obviously, you know, everyone's going to have their own opinions, but facilities need to be made for youngsters. Mm. And these, if you look at Maidstone, and obviously yourselves, these facilities don't have to just be for football either. You know, we use ours through the daytime for other things. There's other sports. They're even going to start using it for some athletics. You know, you can run all that. You know, rounders, they use netball, hockey. Tennis has even been played on ours. So, you know, you're offering a lot of kids, a lot of facilities than what, and you say about the council pitches and that, but the councils now haven't spent a lot of money on new playgrounds. They're losing a lot of their pitches because they're selling them to houses. So, back to the local football club.
Absolutely. So, I'm supposed to jump off that, go on to Thamesmead.
Yeah.
But, I mean, how long have you been at Thamesmead yourself?
11 years. And 11 years, coming into my 10th as the first team manager. It was a club that I just fell into. The chairman there now, I become good friends. I was at VCD Athletic, come through their ranks as doing the under-18s and 21s with reserves. And he asked me to go there, and I come as assistant manager and then took over. But the backroom staff, the committee, my other director, Paul Bowden Brown, are people you just fall in love with, and I did. And I went in there to set the whole club up as a structure, not just the first team. We're a club that get very small gates. It's documented. We're not going to change it. You know, we've got massive community, but we just cannot get them in through the gate. We've got great facilities now, but one thing we've got is a great youth setup, and I went and set that up from day one. And we had loads of teams. We shrunk it down because we only wanted teams that could play underneath the Thamesmead banner on the ground, especially while the building work was going on. And you know, we go now from under 11s up to under 18s. We've got the Ryman youth as well, under 18s. We've got Ryman 21s, and obviously our first team. And the objective is to bring them through. And like I said, this year we've played six from our academy. We've got three academy sides now as well, and they're all at a good level. And it's only because of the facilities we've got, and all you can get good coaching. So as well as sometimes I sit there and even today and thinking, look, I need a change. It's a club actually on the football side of it is a really welcoming and a loving club. And you know, the committee there have looked after me unbelievably and give me a free hand. I do a lot of work there, and but it's a club also that needs a lot of backing, because as we go into councils, we've been completely I can't really say the word on radio, but unstuck, broken promises, and the football club's still fighting on. And as like I said, you're doing out there, you know, we coach 200 kids a week, and people forget that and just think it's all about the first team. But you know, I had a 16-year-old lad made his debut against Needham Market on Saturday, and I've got a 17-year-old lad that plays week in week out that come on against you and completely change the game. And that's what you're trying to do. And you know, we said we haven't got bundles of money, and we're trying to hang in there after being relegated last year. And it's been tough, but you know, we have got some good people around us, so hopefully we can try and get some results.
So do you actually work at the club full time, or you got a job?
I'm there full time. Yeah. I'm lucky. I've got my own business, so which I've been doing. I'm pretty fortunate at work, but I'm there nearly every day, and this is what's wearing me down a little bit, if I'm honest. The club know that as well. You know, I go out watching matches all the time, from academy to even conference football I go and watch. So it's not a full-time job. I'm not paid either. So it's just something that I sort of fell in love with the club and sort of then got it sort of put on my shoulders a little bit, to be honest, to carry, before Paul Bowden Brown, who obviously was at Maidstone, come with, and helped me out massively as well. But It's been tough. We're no ordinary Ryman League club. Even though people do look at our facilities, they're not ours. You know, it was our ground. It's not now, and I don't want to go into that. But it's very tough when you're only getting 40, 50 people through the gate to sort of get a side out because you know we've also got a lot of teams around our area, catchment area. So you're competing with them as well. So hence why I watch a lot of games, especially over in Essex, where you know you try and pick the odd player up there as well.
And that must be difficult for any side. And I remember seeing it sort of like my first year, a couple of years into it, you know. And I said to Ray a few times, you know, especially teams like Waltham Forest when they were in our league, you know, and you was looking at their gates and it was like 24 and 18, and you think, Struve, how does a club manage to keep a plain sort of staff, plus managers, coaches, and all the rest of that's going on, and all the bills that they've got to pay, when they're only getting maybe 200 quid through the gate every home game? It must be a real tough job.
It's hard as well, because, like I said, you know, part of what I do as well, we try and get sponsors in, and it's not for, you know, we don't just turn up and expect to walk through the gate. You know, we deal with the local schools. There's 13 schools. We've leafleted the place. We've offered, you know, Charlton season tickets that are down the road from us to come in for free. Half pint meal. We've contacted, you know, we've done everything like everybody can do. And you can't physically pour them in the gate. You know, it's a very religious place, Thamesmead. There's it's the best way I can put it. And it's people aren't interested in coming to watch. At one point, they never knew we were there, and we sort of done that, especially getting promoted last year. We made a massive thing of it, and sometimes you can't drag people through the gate. And it doesn't, people say, you know, if you're winning, as yourself, you're fortunate, you've got a great setup here, you've got a great support, but you are Harlow Town. Harlow's a big place. You know, we're competing with Charlton just down the road. We've got, you know, Welling United, Dartford, they're all, you know, a throw stone from where we are, as much as we can add all the other Kent League sides in there as well. So you're very much competing with, you know, other people to try and get them in the gate. But it's been a struggle for us all, to be fair. And the club a few times has nearly folded, and it's one of them things that you sit there and I'm very, very fond of the two people that founded the club 40 years ago. And I keep saying to them, look, we can't let the club go because of the work they've done as a junior side. But it is hard, and it's becoming increasingly hard for me at the moment as well. So we'll just see what happens.
So with your academy sites, I mean, did you all the three academy sites started all at once, or was started off with one and managed to get to two, then go to three? Or?
Yeah, we started one 3 years ago, we got involved with obviously SCL. I'm friends with Tony at Dartford, and I asked him how they started at Dartford, because they've got an exceptionally good academy there. We always had a good under 18s and 16s and things like that. So we started at one, and we started late. And to be fair, we'd done the trials, and everyone wanted to go and play for Dartford, Charlton. You know, as you make sure you got here, everyone did one name. So we got what you call the run of the little. We just had boys off the streets. We had 20 lads that some couple could play football, but the rest couldn't. But part of the academy setup is to make these kids, you know, give them something after 2 years. It's getting ready for life. It's not just about football. You're giving them an education. So that team were getting hammered 9-10-0 every week in the Conference Alliance. And, you know, we work with them every day. And this year, they're second years. And I think they're second in the league. I think they lost twice. Again, young Adem Ramadan's come through. The lad I was talking to you about earlier, four or five others have as well, and they're quite strong. And then, so this year we started with a second year, which is first years, and we kept the second years. And then we got together with a local college called Bexley Business Academy, and they're next door to us as well. So we've got three teams running now. A couple have come through. The first years again, our under 16s were strong last year, 18, so we've got a few of them. And we're just trying to give them that they actually do their schooling at the club as well. And you know, it does bring in some funding for the club, which is much needed. But you know, they're looked after so well. You know, with a couple of the lads, you give them opportunities to go to America afterwards, and you're just giving them something different. And you know, when people look at the club and go, "Oh, you're just worried about the first team," there can't be anything from the truth. The first team come last at our club. You know, we're trying to bring these lads through and give them a chance, and it works.
And I mean, that's exactly the same here. I mean, you know, it's a case of, you know, they look at it, and I suppose, 2-3 years ago, you know, even 18 months ago, it was about the first because that's all we had.
Of course.
You know, and now it's a case of everybody, it's all under there. I even had a meeting with the boss today, and he was saying the same thing again today. You know, he was saying to me, look, you know, we want to get these youth teams in, we want to get this in, we want to do three academy sides next year instead of just the one. We want this happen. We want this to happen. We've got these coming in underneath. We've got this big international tournament they can play at now, under 12s. So it's all sort of pinging its way forward. He said, and it'd be fantastic, he said, that we get these guys that when they get to the academy or to our under 17s or under 18s, whatever it may be, that we're then picking them off and they're going into the first team. And you've this year, we've got, over the period of time, you know, when we was going through a bit of a sticky period, we had probably about four players, I think, every game on the bench that was all academy boys.
Well, it's great to see. Well, you've got to do that as well. You know, as I walked in, I said, you know, even as first team manager, it's great when you see a little 7-year-old and he's decked out in his Arlo kit, and it puts a smile on your face. With ourselves, we haven't got the money to go and spend on loads of players, and that's how a lot of teams come unstuck financially as well. Whereas, you know, the worst, if you've got lads, these players that become good players have got to play somewhere as a young kid. Mm. And like I said, and you don't want to be the one to go, well, we play for your academy, because you don't know who they are. You know, and I think that's part of your job. And one of the good things that when I set up, when we started 10 years ago, and this is my ambition, what I wanted for the youth setup, was that I monitor all the youth football from under 11s. Mm. I am the main person that will go and say, yep, and I'll go and watch games with under 11s on a Sunday. And the one thing that you need to do, if they can see a pathway through to the first team, it doesn't matter, you know, we're not Chelsea or whatever, but Thamesmead Town, they still know that that's the first team and we're their main side. You will get the local lads coming to your academy because they know there's a chance. There's a lot of academies out there that have got nothing to do with their football club, you know, and there's some local to us, you know, even the pro club, Charlton Community, things like that. They just use their name and take the money, whereas with us, we actually are genuinely, you know, looking at these players to come through. So every year it starts getting a little bit stronger and stronger, because these lads are sitting there thinking, hold on, we're getting a chance here. The manager's looking, he's involved, the club's interested, and it's the way the club will grow, and you'll find that here. And like I said, you've got a great setup, great people behind all, but the only downside is someone needs to spend a lot of time running it. And you do need them people, and that they're hard to come by.
Absolutely. And I mean, you can hear the noise in the dressing room to the left-hand side. That's the under-16s that train with the first team. You know, they train on half a pitch with the first team, half a pitch. You know, and some of these guys, you know, when they've played, like, behind closed doors, they've been to mingle them. Do you know what I mean? And stuff like this to go. And some people say to me, well, some of the guys you've got there, you wouldn't even know if they were the first team players or not, because they're that good. I mean, they play in the Eastern Junior Alliance. And basically, you know, they very rarely lose. Yeah. Very rarely lose. Do you know what I mean? So, you know, they are really sort of strong side. I mean, one of the players, sort of halfway through last season, I remember, because I'm a local ref, so I remember reffing him when he was sort of under eights, under nines, running around. And he was, he came into the team at the beginning of the last season. He was only with them for, I think, about 6 months. Brentford came calling. One day he was playing, I think, Averley or somebody down here on the Sunday. And then on the following week, he was actually playing in Inter Milan. Do you know what I mean? You know, in the San Siro for Brentwood. You know, and today, literally just before I came out, I've seen on the Twitter feed that Zach has actually been signed up as a full scholar for Brentford. You know, so it's like, you know, and since he's played here, he's actually it's quite funny, if I'm honest, because now he's played against Inter Milan, he's played against Barcelona, and it's quite a quite a funny situation to be in. But so you've got your youth boys coming through. I mean, what about first team?
The first team. It's been a struggle, to be honest with you. We've had a lot of injuries and especially suspensions recently as well, which hasn't helped. It was a big task for us. Getting relegated at the end of last year was a big blow for us, and especially myself. The club really hasn't experienced too much failure. So even in the short period of time we've been in the Ryman League. So it was sort of a brush yourself down and try and pick yourself up. And we started okay. We kept a lot of the side from last year. But then in the last sort of 5, 6, or even longer, I'd say 10 weeks, we've lost a few of the lads that, you know, wanted to stay and play in Ryman Prem, and you can't blame them, and getting a few extra quid. So we've had to start again a little bit, and you know, we're not too far away. We just need to put a little run together and add a little bit of strength, and if we do that, then we start getting results. But it's been tough. You know, you're just going through our website there, and you know,
quite a lot of them have moved on. So you know, it needs a bit of updating, which we know. But you know, we've got a great team spirit, and the lads there, some of them have played with me for a long time, and you know, they just love what the club's about, really.
Mm. And of course, you've got the name that we seem to read out every single week, and we start going through the actual top goal scorers in Tyrus as well. What type of player is Tyrus? A good player?
Tyrus is a good lad, but as we were just saying, 4 years ago, Tyrus was playing community football, absolutely on a park somewhere, and scoring loads of goals, and then he went down, and I think to a local cycle area town, and scored some goals. And Tyrus is an absolutely lovely fella, very passionate, loves his Twitter, I will say that, but very, very passionate. And last year, I put him out on loan, come back. I just thought he wasn't fully focused. And when he come back for us, you know, he scored, I think, 12 goals in 9 games for us at the end of the Ryman Prem. And this year, he got out the blocks again. And he's got a few injuries. He's got a nagging dislocated shoulder that keeps popping out. I think a lot of supporters will see him whacking that back in most weeks. But and then obviously he's just got a suspension, which he's got one more game. But no, 100% fully committed, Tyrus. Very quick, very strong, and he'll run through the wall for me if I asked him. So yeah, we need a lot of them. He's only going to get better as well.
I certainly, just looking, even looking at the picture, I mean, I certainly wouldn't want to be defending against him.
No, I say to him,
he looks like a man mountain.
Every week in training, he's built completely like a brick, as we say, and he's a defender's nightmare. He doesn't stop running, and he's always knocking him out the way. He's not technically, you know, the best finisher in the world or whatever, but his heart's massive, and he's got better. And once you relax, he goes for a spell, and he scores goals. He's got a lot of pace about him.
It's quite funny. When we first started doing the show, we did a piece called "Is There Anybody Harder Than Danny Brown?" Because basically what happened one day, there was almost on the same sort of line as yourself, he dislocated his shoulder, and the shoulder blade was down somewhere near his nipple when they did the actual x-ray. And the following Tuesday we had a game, and he was here, no sling, no nothing, with both hands and just leaning on the actual metal bar, looking over the top to see what's going on. And the way you're sort of describing Tyrus, he seems to be the same sort of character.
Identical. I tell you, I put Tyrus in really well. As I said, his shoulder must come out 4 or 5 times this year, but his last game, I think, the game before, it might be the other game, but he had a hairline fracture in his foot and played on the Saturday, and he played on the Tuesday night for me. So he played through it. He's what every manager needs, really.
And then, does Adam still?
He's the lad, yeah.
Yeah, so he looks like same. He looks to me like he should be in something like Anyways Essex or something like that.
He's actually Spanish. He's unfortunately, yeah. He is a bit like Joey Essex with his brain. But I will say I think a lot of people have been speaking about him. He's the best young talent I've seen at this level and a few leagues above for years. This kid's going to be an exceptionally good footballer. So keep your eye out for him.
Got him on contract?
He's on a contract, yeah. He's on a contract, but he's, you know, we won't stand in his way. And if the right club come along and so, we bring him through. But he's just got a little bit of a groin strain at the moment. But again, plays for our academy still. So, you know, he's come through the ranks. We look after him, but he's an unbelievable footballer.
And I think that's the thing, isn't it? I think if we going back to what we said before, if you've only got attendance of, you know, what you're saying, 70, 80, 100, whatever it may be, you're not then generating the money to then go out and get some of the big boys like a David Knight or, you know, or whoever it may be. If you've then got your players that are actually coming through your academy system and coming into the team, you've already got your ready-made superstars coming in and through, and then you just put them in.
Also, them young lads trust you if you're giving them a chance. And you know, with young kids, yeah, they make mistakes, but they're raw. They give you 110%, and they do exactly what you ask them to do. And like I said, you know, any Harlow fan will know of them, because he was the lad when I brought on with 20 minutes to go to turn the game.
Oh, okay.
And everyone stood back and went, wow, who's he? You know, Danny will know him. He's something special. Yeah. And you know, I think with the youngsters, you've got to be brave enough to give them a go.
Well, we had... I mean, you talk about youngsters. There's one youngster that springs to my mind straight away, because I saw him play a couple of times and it was just absolutely out of this world. And you knew it weren't going to be long before he was not playing for us anymore, if you know what I'm saying. We actually went down and had a Essex Cup game against Southend. And the talk, as we were queuing up to get burgers and drinks and stuff before the game, was Southend fans at the time were going for a rough time. weren't scoring goals, and of course it was all about Alex Reid, and he wanted to know about Alex Reid this, Alex Reid that. I ended up having my Alex Reid away shirt on, and of course when I do the Tannoy, I actually call him the Machine. So every time he scores, he gets called out as Alex the Machine Reid, and that's what I've got written on the back of my shirt. And of course a couple of the lads there were saying to me, you know, he's here tonight. I said, well, we've got Lewis in the trophy on Saturday. I don't suppose he'll be playing tonight. Not expecting Danny to play a full-strength team. Went out there and he was playing a full-strength side. And I think it was only in about the two guys that were asking about him and a few others were all sitting around us on that right-hand side. And I think within about the first sort of 20 minutes or so, Alex had scored. And I just turned around and said, well, that's Alex, by the way. Do you know what I mean? But we were scared that night that we was going to possibly lose him because he's a quality player. And we thought, hang on a minute, Southend could pick him up here because they haven't necessarily got a decent strike at the minute or not putting the goals in. Not that you noticed that, it's just the fact of what you was hearing around the ground and people having a go and all the rest of it. And at the end of it, we actually, the following day, we actually picked up a young lad from who was playing that at the Southend side. We beat him 4-2, but he was playing for the Southend side and he shone that night. A young lad called Daniel Matasuka at Southend, and he was just sensational. And we brought him in, and Danny played him. And to be honest to Danny, and again, it's about playing, as you said, giving him the chance and all the rest of it. Well, really, the biggest game we've had this year was the home game against Needham Market. Really tight game, top two playing each other. Danny throws him in from the start. And you're sitting there thinking, this is going to be make or break time for you, son, because if you make a mistake here, it could be, you know, not curtains, but you know, it's going to be a tough game for you to come straight into. And you know, I think he made one tiny mistake at the very, very beginning and managed to get back and recover his mistake. And for the rest of the game, this young lad was absolutely sensational for the whole game. And what we didn't know at the time was the South End guys were watching him from the thing, and now he's part of the first team squad. So we ain't got him here anymore. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? But it was just that case of seeing these young lads come down from their youth setup, come down, and I think it's a case of maybe why aren't these teams, you know, doing that? That are maybe around your sort of area as well, where you've got the as you say, in Charlton or whatever, you've got some youth players. Send them down and let them play, you know, and let them come get some experience of playing down there.
No, it's exactly right. You know, I know VCD have had a couple of Charlton lads, and, you know, I speak to Gillingham here and there, but, they you know, I think they just maybe look and go, oh, that's Thamesmead Town, small club. It's, you know, and you do get that. But, you know, to be honest, we've got good relationships, like I said, with Dartford, Welling and things like that, the local conference sites that bring youngsters down for us, so because they do know we're gonna, you know, we look after them as well, and that's the main thing. You know, I also in our own league, I took a young lad from Billericay who was going to go to Southend and broke his wrist, Rowan Libard, who was absolutely sensational for me, and he was 19, and obviously Craig's took him back now for Billericay, and he's scoring goals for fun, and he had 10 weeks with us that he absolutely adored it. And it's made him a completely different player. So, yeah, they do need it. Mm. And I think it's part of your duty as a manager. You've got to try and you can't keep the old players. You cannot keep going out and signing players. You've got to have a bit of consistency. And the ones that are right under your nose are the ones normally you miss.
Mm. I mean, do all your youth sides, I mean, how far down do you go? Do you go right the way down to the little ones?
Or no, we're struggling to get pitches on our own ground. Again, that's another story. But going back to councils, but we've got under 11s, 12s, 13s, 14s, 15s, 16s, 18s. So they all play. Again, you know, they all don't come down and watch. We've got some of the local schools we get in, try and get them to watch. But, you know, they train some of them on a Saturday morning at the ground as well. So, yeah, you know, we've got some... got some decent lads there, and a lot, like I kept saying to you, we coach over 200-300 boys a week, and a lot of people don't see what local community clubs do for their own community.
So do the club, especially I suppose like your academy boys, your under 18s, 16s and that, do they all play the same style as the first team, so that if you have an issue where you need a left back, you can just go in there and pick it out of the academy or whatever?
Some do. The academy, obviously they're full time. Some do. You know, I think, if you know, we don't play the same shape all the time, and I'm not a believer in having a shape. I think, you know, especially youngsters, I think you should try and make them play different positions and different formations. And again, we played a completely different formation on Saturday away in Needham than what we have been playing the week before. I think it depends on what players you've got, what formation you try and play, and that's what you do for the week. some of them at the beginning come down and try and say, look, we play, the 18s try and play the same way as we do. I don't force them. You know, I don't think you should force them. You try and get the best out of what you can get. To answer your question, they don't all play that way. Some look at it and go, oh, not thought about playing that way, three up front and whatever. But I think having a first team and changing the old style of 4-4-2, and some teams still play it, there's nothing wrong with of every team played that way in the whole year club's gone. And they do try and, you know, coaches are a little bit more developed now and they do try and play different ways. So, it's we're not regimented. I don't make them do that. As long as they're coaching the right way, we're quite happy. Mm.
So the games you've got coming up then, you've got, Deering, did you say, coming up as well?
No, Saturday we go to Ware,
right,
which is always difficult up there. It's obviously local to you. Tuesday night we're in our County Cup quarter-final at home to Ramsgate, which will be another difficult game. And then we've got Wroxham at home, which again is going to be difficult because we went up to Wroxham and got a bit of a hiding, to be fair, midweek, which isn't easy to go to, which is always the way. But they were a good side. But we're a little bit different at home. You know, our home record's not too bad. So we just need to put a run. There's no team, even on Saturday against Needham, we had a lot of players short and we play really well.
Yeah.
And, gave them a game. I think the one thing I've noticed since we've come down is that the league's strong. And, anyone can beat anyone. You know, you said about Barkingside have got Needham this week. If it's at Barkingside, that's going to be a tough game. If Needham win, it'd be 1-0. That's what we found is that, and I think Nick said on the phone, the team that works the hardest, and this is how we got promoted, like he's saying, Brentwood, they're the teams that are difficult to beat at this level, in difficult conditions. They play the same 43 games of the year. You know, out of 46 maybe. So, it's tough.
So, you said about going to, you know, Wroxham on a Tuesday night. I know we do. We I think two or three years we've done that journey. Is it one of those sort of things for me? I mean, I'd look at that from a league sort of point of view. Would you expect the league to almost turn around and say, well, look, hang on a minute, you know, the likes of yourself, us, and the teams that have got a massive journey, well, we've got to try and make sure, we've got to try and cover this where we've got to make sure that they're actually playing that game on a Saturday, you know, to the best of our ability, to the fact that, you know, I know there's going to be stuff where it's going to get bad weather or whatever else. And, you know, that was a question I asked to people the other week and said, look, you know, those sort of games where you've got long journeys, would you expect them to be on a Saturday? And, you know, and also as well, you look at some of the games and you think, would you expect... It's tough because it's difficult at the moment because there's only three teams with it as such, but it seems to make sense that teams likes of Harlow, Whiteleaf, Maidstone as it stands this year, would it not be common sense to say to them, right, okay, so August, September, those sort of days, you're going to play 3-1 away games, if you know what I mean, three away games, one home game or whatever. So come the summer, come the winter, you've then got these teams that have got the weather pitches, that can then actually play maybe 2-3-1 the opposite way round.
Yeah, I understand where you're coming from, but then it also gives you an unfair advantage for them three teams. You're always playing on a good pitch. The Wroxham, teams like Wroxham and that have to travel down every week as well, so they've got that. But I remember our first week in the Ryman Prem, the Tuesday night, we had to go away to Loverstoff on Tuesday. But for me, I've always said, and obviously we've come from a small club for over a short period of time, is that if you play at this level of football, you've got to travel. And if you go up to the league above in the conference and things like that, you know, you're going up to Gateshead on a Tuesday night. So I know you get more fun in it, but that's part of this football. And some of it, you know, it is difficult. You've got to try and get a team. A lot of the lads work, you know, and if you've got to meet at 3 o'clock, it's difficult for some of the lads. Mm. But it's part and parcel of it, unfortunately, and I don't moan about it. You just sit there and go, well, you've got to go there on a Tuesday. You don't look forward to it, but if you win, it's quite a nice journey home. But yeah, no, it is difficult. I think the league's try and get a lot of them on a Saturday, but you can't get everyone travelling to Wroxham on a Saturday.
So, I mean, how do you cope with that? So as a Ryman manager, I mean, how do you cope with the situation where, you know, you turn up to training? I'm assuming, I don't know how often in advance you tell your players what time you want them to meet and stuff like that, but you turn up on you know, for your training, say, and one of them comes up to you and say, if it's Tyrus or Adam, comes and says, can't make it this week, Governor. I've got to work late and stuff. Does it throw all your plans in?
Yeah, of course it does.
Completely throws it all up. And
yeah, when we first start at the beginning of every season, we sort of say, look, if you want to achieve anything and win anything, you've got to have commitment. You know, I'm committed. I'm there more than they are. You know, I'm there a couple of hours before it, you know, they even mostly get out of bed. But they work, and you know, and work's their livelihood, and we don't pay them enough money to change their job. You just hope that the commitment that they've got, that they want to be a better footballer or be a team player, will get you there. But there is times, and it's normally on the day. Most managers will tell you, you get a phone call on the day because they don't want to tell you the week. They won't tell you on the Saturday because you think they might drop them. So you get the phone call on the Tuesday, Sam, can't make it, I'm working. And it happens. I don't think we've ever gone to many long journeys midweek and took the whole squad down. But it's just something you've got to learn to deal with, and don't let it affect you.
Is that their commitment though to you, or is that just necessarily something that they can't necessarily do too much about, because they want to come and play?
Yeah.
They want to come and play for you on a Saturday or a Tuesday, but
yeah, I don't think any player would just don't yeah. won't want to turn up because yeah. they've got to go to, you know, we keep using Wroxham, but or Deer and that.
Yeah.
You don't get that. If they're sitting on the bench, you might, you know, yeah. they might get the ump. It is going to be if they can logistically get there. You know, you hopefully think most of your team are loyal to you and them sitting, you know, their teammates, and you try and create that vibe in the changing room that they want to be there. Mm. You know, I say to our lads all the time, you know, what would you rather do? Be sitting in a changing room playing 90 minutes of football, or, you know, being stuck at work? It's a no-brainer. You know, they've got to enjoy their time at football, but, and it also is their stress reliefs. But, you know, sometimes you physically cannot get, you know, I've got a lad, I know he's boss at work, he hates football. So if he goes, I'm going, it was in the Ryman Prem, I've got to go and play such and such, and he just looked at him and said, so? You know, there are some, you know, lenient people around, but it's tough on the players as well. But that's what makes that player for the next level, you know, to play conference, to go and play pro. They've got to be committed. They've got they know the fixtures. They know if they're playing on a bank holiday. They know if they're playing Boxing Day. They know if they're playing New Year's Day. You know, they're different scenarios. That, you know, that's part and parcel of the level of football they're playing at. They are getting paid something, which is, you know, as you said about the little lads playing football out there, they'd give everything to swap a shirt with Alex Reid and go and play centre forward for Harlow. And I think a lot of players take that for granted a little bit, and you have to try and keep their feet on the floor with that. That's difficult. But, yeah, no, you hopefully as a manager you don't get players that won't turn up.
So do you get your sort of youth players, especially like the under 11s, 12s, do they sort of, how can I put this, it's going to sound a weird question to ask, but do they get excited when they see Tyrus? Do they get excited when they see him and think to yourself, you know, all going up to him? Because I know we had it here, you know, last year when we only had sort of two or three sides, you know, and we had people like Darren Blewett and people like they were going up to him and going to him, can I have your autograph? Can you have your autograph? And these guys are like taxi drivers and school teachers and they're going, what's this about? Do you know what I mean? Because they're not used to that sort of side of it. And even getting, I know Darren was asked, oh, look, can you do me a favour? You know, one of the boys asked him who signed his boots. And sort of Darren sort of, I don't know if I'm allowed to do that. And went and asked the mum to make sure that he could sign the boot. And it's that type of thing. And you see it now, you know. And it's, I suppose it's a little bit about going back almost to the Horsham thing. It's, you see where we were 4 years ago, where the club was in so much stuck, we didn't even know it was even going to be here. I mean, before my time, but they didn't know it was even going to be here. Yeah. To now, where you walk around and you speak to Ray, and the amount of shirts, first team shirts this season that we've sold, and not just through the loyal supporters, that the people are just going in there and buying, and they want this shirt, they want that shirt.
Well, the kids want asking their mums.
It's amazing, and they want their numbers on the back, and they want this on the back of it. And it's just, you know, I know there's two young lads here who's the their dad's the coach, and he's in charge of all the youth here as well. They've got their names on the back, but as soon as they see them coming out, you know, they're straight away like that. It's just amazing.
This
atmosphere
is the beauty with non-league footballers. Like I said, we coach six of our local primary school teams. We go in there, and I go in there and do it as well with some of them. And we've just been doing that every Saturday. Each school, we're letting in for nothing, and we're making it a match day experience where they get early. They before the game, they meet the manager, question and answer session, the committee. They come down in the changing rooms. They come out. You know, they have a. We give them all a sheet with all the players on. They line up while we're doing the warm-up, the players will go over, they'll sign all their signatures for them, they'll wait, you know, we put on something to eat for them. It's nothing, you know, you ask school and it's a day out. And and as every player walks over, it's, oh, I've got him, he's their top goal scorer. Or, like you said, there's Alex Reid, he's a, you know, their parents know, they've seen pictures around. Or, as you said as well, we train on a Tuesday, we have our under-13s and 14s next to us. On a Thursday, our under-18s and our under-16s next to us. And as one of them walks out on the pitch, or I walk across the pitch, they will go, that's first team manager. Or if I go and watch their game on a Sunday, they all know we're there. But I think that's good as well, because if any of them then come in your changing room to be like, you know, a first team player, they're not nervous, they know you. And you know, and I think you should have that around the club, and on all the lads, and you'll have that here at Harlow. They're not all big time Charlies that are going to say no to anyone. They love it as well. They love being recognised. They love that interacting. And if they can help put a smile on anyone's face, I think you should do that. And you know, as we keep saying, and you've got it here, we're community football clubs, and Horsham are trying to be that. Cray Wanderers are trying to be that. Why should they have to go and play somewhere else to be that?
Yeah,
and that's what a lot of club, lot of people need to realise.
You say, you know, first hand of that. You know, he's like, even my young daughter now, he's a club photographer. You know, and it's like, you know, she comes up to me and says, "Oh, Alex was saying I'll take a photograph of me today," or Shane was saying, "Make sure you get some of me today." And he said, "I walk in and they go, all right, Heather, or all right, so and so." She said, and she loves it. She just thinks he's absolutely brilliant. And she winds me up when another one of the first teams actually accepted her on Facebook and then accepted Dad. Do you know what I mean? And it's like, oh, I've got so-and-so, I've got Billy Jones, or I've got Alex Reid, and you ain't got them, have you? And she'll check my Facebook and say, you still ain't got them, they ain't accepted you. And I mean, one of them was Junior Dadson last year when he was here, accepted her, and for almost the whole of the season, he hadn't accepted me until right the end of the season. And she was giving me pelters for it, like all the way through the season. But it was that sort of thing, you know, which brings it all in. And you see so many children in the stands now as well. You know, even our under-16s now, you see them go round with the fanatical supporters on the other side and joining with them with the chants. And they now know all the chants. They now know everything. And they all just go flood over there with the flags. And it's great to see, you know, it's for it. And it's, you know, and it's, I know it might be a little bit down to the success, but you've seen, you know, the crowds grow from sort of 100... 150.
Well, I think that's down to your facilities sort of as well.
You know, and they're going in that right direction. Yeah.
Well, it's the only way your club's going to survive. The youngsters make your club survive. It's either playing or watching. You know, and it's like at every level, and other pro clubs say the same. But the only way that local clubs like us can survive is to get the locals in. And the only way we do it is through football. And like I said, you're doing that there, and we're trying to do it. And it's something that I think that you need to do.
So I suppose one of the questions I should ask you is, what's been your proudest moment?
Proudest moment? What, in football?
I suppose at Thamesmead, I suppose, in the way. I mean,
I've been there so long, it's been getting promoted to the Roman Prem, was winning the playoff final was my proudest moment, I think. Just the team spirit. If you go on YouTube and you see what's gone on in the changing room after, and again, being two goals down.
Was that against Maldon?
Against Maldon, yeah. It was two goals down after 20 minutes, and the lads show some character, and we come back and obviously won on penalties as well, and could have won it in extra time. And we just had that team spirit, and we weren't the best footballing side in the division. But we were hard to beat, you know. We've done our homework on every single side in the league, and just momentum carried us through. And we believed no one could beat us. It didn't matter who it was, and it showed, because, like I said, since Christmas we went one game unbeaten. I think we won the last 12 on the spin, and we come from not nowhere, but no one gave us a hope in hell. And I said to the lads at Christmas, if we get in the playoffs, we'll win it, because we've never lost a cup final. We've never lost a semi-final, really, like in a league basis. And it's just, we had that great, the club was buzzing and everyone wanted to be there. And it's that was, you know, and to actually sit there and sit and think, wow, you're three leagues away from the Football League, where I took the club over when we had a shack as a stand. And it was great times, and every game last year in the Wyoming Prem was a proud moment. It was breaking history every time you played a game of football. The club had never been that far before, and maybe you never will again. Without a doubt, that was the proudest moment.
There must be, I mean, especially then. I mean, one of the things we spoke to Terry about it previously last year, and as well, and I suppose, how do those, you know, especially the Maldon situation, you know, that must be so, so difficult for a manager to pick them up the following season.
Well, and even happened.
And even at Thurrock, when Thurrock were relegated because of points taken away then last year, you know, I think Needham Market had to win by a certain amount of goals. We did call that on the show that they'd do that as well, by the way. But they did it, and how do you bounce back? You know, how twice for Thurrock. I mean, Thurrock again got to try and bounce back again this year after last year, and it must be so tough for the likes of Mark Simpson, the manager there, and Terry, the manager at the time at Maldon as well.
Yeah, you need your break. I think the pre-season this year was the first time I actually took a break. I needed to get away from football. You know, I said I'm normally down the club every day, and I needed to get away. But you have that football. It's mostly being like a Arsenal fan, okay? That you get so close every year, but you don't just throw the towel in. You know, every year you get the start of the season, you get that buzz and think we can win it. Non-league's no different, and being a manager, you've got to be a certain breed to be a manager. You've got to be very thick-skinned, bordering arrogant, I would say. You can't let things affect you. Personally, it takes a massive thing. I think, you know, people don't understand you've got families as well, and my family suffer massively because of what I do at Thamesmead. But you've just got to, you know, you've got to be very, very self-driven and try and get, you know, build that team to get there. And, you know, it's like losing 3-2, one win it in the last minute, and then 7 days later you win. Your emotions are just up and down, and you've got to have that, and you've got to be focused. But as I said, you've got to really do your job properly and go out, watch your players, watch your games, watch your teams you're playing against, and try and you know, think that's how we're going to win. And once you've done that, and you get on track, and you've gone and watched someone, and everything falls into plan, it you forget about what happened, you know, the end of last season, and you go again. Time you actually can't get over it. It's time to take a step back and walk away, I think. But yeah, it's just that drive of wanting to win games. There's nothing better. So, you know, I finished playing football early through an injury, and I mean, I couldn't play, you know, again properly, but there's no better feeling when you're a manager than winning a game. You know, as a player it's brilliant, but as a manager it's down to you. You know, you take the highs and the lows, and you take the responsibilities, and, you know, there's times that my family can't come near me at the weekend, and maybe not until a Monday night. But the best thing is Tuesday there's another game, and it's all forgotten. And it's preparing yourself for that. You can't feel hard done by any football.
Well, I've been told, just before we go to the news again, I've been told, and I said it to you off air earlier on, that people have told me, to at least everybody I've spoken to, and said that you're on tonight. I said, oh, you've got the hardest working manager in the game in the studio with you tonight. So I think that deserves a lot of credit as well. But the admission price, just before we get to it, so if you want to go to see a Thamesmead game, it's £8 for adults, old age pensioners, and concessions at £5. Full-time students upon production of a valid student ID card, £5, and 11 to 16-year-olds, £3. So if you want to get down to Thamesmead, we're going to leave you just for about 5 minutes, and when we come back, hopefully on the line will be one of the men that's manager of one of the teams in that betting for the Premier League title. It's Gary will be with us from Hendon in about 5 minutes' time.